This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is March 24th, 2015. I would love everyone to hang on to your seats because I have officially been able to get Sheldon Neidel on our show today. And for those of you who are not familiar with Sheldon, he has really made his mark on the world as one of the most informative channelers out there. He was born in New York City on November 11th, 1946, and grew up in Buffalo, New York. His first extraterrestrial and UFO experiences began shortly after his birth and were highlighted all through his childhood by various modes of contact phenomena, as well as accompanying manifestations, light form communications, extraterrestrial visitations, and teaching and learning sessions on board spacecraft. During most of his life, he has enjoyed ongoing telepathic communications and direct core knowledge inserts, such as etheric and physical implants, which are near and dear to my life, Sheldon. Sheldon has visually observed and physically experienced spacecraft throughout the years. And at the age of 14, he requested that the Sirians and the Galactic Federation of Light Allies discontinue the communications because the experiences were overwhelming. They were causing conflicts between the knowledge that he was learning on Earth versus that which he was being taught regarding the scientific knowledge that they were giving him. They left, but they told him they would be back. And it was time to complete his mission for planet Earth. They would show back up, which they've done. In high school, he was placed in an advanced science program and has a tremendous amount of background in education in physics, chemistry, and calculus. There's so much more to read on his bio. Feel free to read it on the BBS radio show Station 2 for Galactic Connection. You can get all that good detail about Sheldon's resume and background. Now, before we get started, I just wanted to remind everybody, if you're new to Galactic Connection, please go to galacticconnection.com/daily-blog. Or, of course, you can always click on the daily blog tab at the top of the menu. We do cover everything from ufology to spirituality to anything to do with cosmic anything, conspiracy, quantum physics, you name it. And Sheldon is one of the ones that we do highlight every single week with his inexhaustive dedication to bringing out the information to support the light. We cannot thank him enough for the support that he's given all of us. I'm sure anybody that's sitting here listening to this radio show would love to give him a big hug and applaud him for the amount of effort he's put out there. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and bring him forward. But I do want everyone to know that I do pre-record these shows from time to time. And this just happens to be on the 20th of March. Now, today, as we all know, is an extremely special day. We are in the aftermath of three solar storms, one on the 7th, one on the 11th, and one on the 17th. But today rings a very special treat. We had a super new moon at 2:36 this morning, a solar eclipse at 2:45 this morning, and now, of course, the launching of the March equinox at 3:45 this afternoon. So I'd like to start it off with, Sheldon, what is your impression and information on what is this bringing forth for the planet?
Well, it's part of a process that has been going on for years, not decades, which is with every, you might say, astrological phenomena that happens, they bring those energy waves in from inner dimensions, and it brings us up to a higher level of awareness, which is why, as all this has happened over the last few decades for me, I have noticed that more and more people are able, because of it, to look at what you're doing and not be weirded out by it, but actually start accepting it and beginning to do research on it and becoming a follower. And that has really been wonderful for me to see all of this happening. So I'm very happy that all this is happening, and I know it will continue all the way up until we get into the mass contact aspect of this whole process. So just know that you're on a ride, and it's going to keep going.
So basically what you're saying is this is just another one of those waves that we're surfing to bring us closer to that point of really fully being an ascended field.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what we're doing little by little by little by little. And sometimes it's more than a little, but the process is basically to keep moving forward until we reach a certain point where everything around us is really changing, and we can then go on to the next step, which is we'll be able to see our space brothers and sisters and our spiritual ones as well, and we will be then in the midst of real live contact.
Awesome. God, and I know everybody, it's like we're literally salivating for that moment. It couldn't happen fast enough. Now, do you agree that we are officially in the lower fourth dimension at this point in time?
I would say we're moving through the fourth right now. That's why a lot of us are sensing spirits and things similar to that, because that's the realm in which they exist in. So as we move through the fourth, we will, more and more of us will actually get what I call visitations or weird dreams or any kind of stuff similar to that that helps you to reign better and understand better the whole process of how all of this operates.
Okay. Now, this is a question that I've always wanted to ask someone, and in particular you, and that is, there's many of us that have been told that we have ascended before and that we would not be here as the star seeds that came to planet Earth if we had not already gone through an ascension process. What is your opinion on that?
Well, all the beings that we are from, the star seeds, that is, all of us are from fully conscious civilizations, galactic societies, as I like to call them. And as a result, we know what all this is about, only it's innately, it's a feeling. It's not yet where we can wake up every day and know exactly where we are, who we are, any of that, but we just sense it. Starseeds, more and more, as they are born, understand fully why they're here. And that's why a lot of them have been telepathic with their parents. A lot of them have done what to their parents are strange and weird things. And so we have a knowledge of what's happening. And so we are more open to the telepathy of the spirit and of the Federation. And so we are there and we understand it. And so we act to a lot of people what seems like being strange, but we're not. We understand what's happening. We've been given instructions, and we are following the reason why we incarnated on this world.
Right on. Now, do you agree in the sequence that has been suggested out on the internet that a chain of events will occur at the time of the major, you know, big bam event, so to speak? Do you think that that is accurate, that announcements will come first, mass landings will come second, and then the ascended masters will walk amongst us?
That's coming. We're not quite there, but we're at the edge of it. Yeah, there will be an amazing set of announcements, because we need to change these governments that are in charge of the whole process of maintaining this ridiculous cover-up, which is it's not just skepticism now. It's become outright lies. And every day I hear any kind of information or stuff about this or that happening, I'm upset. They have to really go. They're actually sitting in the way. They're the giant obstacle in front of us. And I know that people right now on this planet who have more resources and other things related to monies and abilities to do these things that have to do with government, et cetera, are working to change this all right now. And I'm sure they're getting very close to the magical moment. So I'm very happy about that, because once that giant obstacle is out of the way, it'll get a lot faster. And that's what I really want.
Yeah, you and me both. How do you perceive some of the major heads of state, such as Putin and Obama and Netanyahu? I mean, do you truly feel that someone such as Obama, is he like a double agent?
I have no idea, because he is tied in heavily with the Wall Street group, which is the basis of the dark cabal. You have to be president. If you're not with them, you're not president. And you're something else very fast, and it's not living. So he knows that. He has to live among that. But he has been very emphatic in maintaining their basic message and what they are trying to do. So I don't know about that. Putin has been working very hard for change, so I know that's happening. Netanyahu represents a phase, an aspect, a fraction of the Israeli government that is fully supporting the U.S. and has done things to help it out. Mm-hmm. And I've known about that ever since the 70s. And so I really would say he's more of that. He's more on the dark side than the light side. But
We'll see. Yeah, I just would think, because of the awesome mystery in which the light work within to get the job done. You know, I say to people all the time, they really do make lemonade out of lemons.
They do.
And they do a phenomenal job. We wouldn't be where we are today. So do you agree that this is the only dark, prisoned planet left? Or do you feel that the darkness has literally kind of taken over, from what I've read, millions of other planets and systems?
I don't believe that. I will just say this. The only problem left in this galaxy that I know of is unfortunately right here. And I have to say, from talking continually with the Federation and from all that they say, they are very positive, and they have among them right now all members of the former other side, the Anchara Alliance group, that was busily making war or trying to break truces and doing all kinds of weird, crazy stuff. They are now on the other side. There has been revelations that have changed it over. So the only non-peaceful aspect that I know of is unfortunately right here.
That's fantastic. You know, and we're going to kind of jump right into where I was leading, which is the Anchara Treaty. You had mentioned that Archangel Michael had supposedly put out a call, and the call was to the dark, that it was time to turn to the light. I was going to ask you, do you agree that there still are certain dark factions that not only are resisting, but are they in fact fighting amongst themselves?
That went through about two decades ago. There was a time when the remaining fleets that didn't quite fully understand the peace process were fighting among one another. It was almost like, how dare you do this? And the other group was saying, well, we're going to be in charge of this. And they were fighting back and forth, literally fighting, because they have these incredible, unbelievable weaponry. And so that ended roughly about two decades ago. So we can just basically say as a truth that it's not happening anymore, that the only stuff that is not good here is what the dark itself, what the minions, as I like to call them, the dark cabal, are doing to each other and to us, especially to us.
You know, Sheldon, what is your perspective on all of the cloning of these major players? You know, your CEOs and your banksters, as I call them, your heads of state. Isn't that one of the challenges for the light, is that there has been so much cloning, and supposedly there's a lot of interdimensional being taking place?
Well, what has happened, there was a quarantine, and all that stuff that could possibly happen from other dimensions, other peoples, other realities, was cut off. We are basically still in a quarantine, so I don't worry about that. As far as the cloning, I think a lot of that is overdrawn and is misinformation, and it's all over the place, and I don't basically agree with it. And what we have on this planet is the last images of the Dark Cabal doing its thing, and if all that I'm constantly told is correct, which I have no doubt it probably is, this is coming to an end very shortly. I can't give you dates or months or weeks, but it's very shortly.
Yeah, it feels it, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And in fact, do you agree that the quarantine was instituted by the Arcontic Network, or do you agree that it was instituted by the Light to kind of shut out this viral?
Yeah, it was done by the Light, because this entire civilization, which was founded originally as a fully conscious civilization in Lemuria and before that in Hibernia, all of that was to be protected. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we are part of an Atlantean experiment, and everything went wrong because of the experiment. We wound up remaining as limited conscious beings. The Atlantis went down as part of the fight between the two forces, one in where modern Greece is, Ionia, and the Atlanteans. The Atlanteans lost, the continents went down, and suddenly they had to leave, and that's what they did. And they left behind the group that had been their partners in crime, so to speak, which are called by the Sumerians as the Anunnaki. Hmm. And this group, over the last 12-plus millennia, have worked very, very hard to maintain this limited consciousness, what do we call it, creation gods, mm-hmm. Goddesses,
right.
Relationship. And it finally ended with the Anchara Treaty. They changed sides. They knew what was happening. They expected the minions to turn their faces to the dark and change sides as well. Unfortunately, these guys are a little bit skeptical, and since they have spent the centuries and millennia among those with greater powers, their fear of them, which we would immensely have, they do not have it.
Wow.
So they just continued onward. Okay, they said the chairman of the board and the CEO have left. The company is still intact. Let's move forward. And so they took 2 decades. Actually, the first thing they did was, of course, 9/11.
Right.
But they did not have the ability to bring it back to where they wanted. 96 was the year when they were supposed to finish off the job, where they were going to lock us in genetically into being limited conscious beings and make us into a slave race. The Light came in, and Anchara changed the whole process. The Anchara Continuum went over and simply said, you are now in charge. Michael and the rest of the group came in, all the archangels, and they worked hard on this place to change it. Unfortunately, like I said, the minions do not fear angels, and they do not fear the dark. So, matter of fact, they look at it as working for them. They know from large amounts of centuries of working with them, of certain little chants they can do, magical incantations they can do, and so they have been miserly doing that. But they found out over the last 30 years, especially the last 20, that the whole process that they were good at, using these chants, etc., they just don't work anymore.
Mm.
They started off initially with a bang, so to speak, 9/11, the war in Iraq, and all the other stuff related to it with Afghanistan. But then after a while, everything collapsed around them. Now they're worried about their monies. They don't have enough gold. They're all worried now that they're about to come to an end. And they fear that. You know, you have things like George Bush Sr. saying, well, if they really knew what was going on here for the last few centuries, they'd probably all pick us up and hang us from the nearest light post.
Wow.
So they understand. They are very, very afraid for the first time, but they are not giving up. It's unbelievable the arrogance that they have accrued over the millennia. And that's what we're fighting right now, is the immense amount of power that they have accrued, the immense amount of arrogance that they have put forth, and they're kind of just like thumbing their nose. But they're finding out that this arrogance is not working, and so I think they are running near the end where everything is going to shift over, and they are going to suddenly find themselves in a position where those people who really want the planet to be prosperous, peaceful, and cooperative with one another are going to be in charge of all this. So slowly but surely, actually more surely than anyone could imagine, but not as fast as I would like it, they are surrounding them. They are drying up their resources. They are taking over their various institutions, and they're getting ready to do the final put down. So that's what I see from all that I am told, and I am very happy about all of that, because the sooner this planet is out of any war modes, the sooner this planet is prosperous, the sooner this planet has governments that actually cooperate with each other and actually do what Lincoln said in the Gettysburg Address about governments by and for the people shall not perish from the earth, is what has to happen right now. And I am ecstatic about that. And as I said, I wish it happened yesterday.
Yeah, no kidding. So it's almost like their perception of invincibility has kept this whole thing going then.
It has.
That's crazy. And you mentioned also the curses and the incantations, I think is what you said.
Yeah.
Are you referring to black magic?
Black magic. And the most, it's almost like something out of a dark movie, yeah.
Wow. Because we run into that a lot with the implant removal process, and we can't believe how much difficulty there is with those sorts of cases when black magic is involved. It's very intense.
It's extremely intense, and of course, they are all grandmasters of it. They are taught from the time they are children.
Incredible.
So by the time they get to be adults, they understand all the different aspects of all the different incantations and how one thing follows another, and they always do their meetings together. And when they do their various meetings, Bohemian Grove being just a very slight example of it, they are busy doing those things that increase the energy, the dark energy around us. So they're doing all of that. They also have a ring around the world of psychics that work for them. And so we are constantly being attacked by these people. So, yes, they are really experts at all these things. So the sooner we get rid of them and put them in a nice, safe place out of the way so we can continue on with our journey toward full consciousness, I say, hooray.
No kidding. In fact, I heard the other day, you probably would be interested in this, that, they just keep coming out with other psychic oriented weaponry against a lot of us.
Right.
And I was told the other day that there was a decision made that would become null and void.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would become null and void. One of the things that they have and that they've perfected over the last 25 years is what are called directed energy weapons. Now, the earliest example of that, a very primitive version of that, was HAARP. They now have much more advanced weaponry than that. And that kind of weaponry was part of the things that were used in 9/11 and have been used in a lot of other things. The weather control going on over California, the so-called chemtrail experiment, part of that is part of utilization right now of these weapons.
Jeez. And in fact, Sheldon, I don't know if you've noticed, because I know you do live in California, there was a space of time where in say the last 7 days, about 3 to 4 days, no chemtrails for the first time, like very pristine, clear, clean energies. And then all of a sudden in the last 3 days, they just plastered the skies. What is your perspective as to what triggers them to do that and when?
They have a system. It's based upon how can we put this? I guess the best way to say it is they have a system, like a calendar, of when certain astrological events occur, and they can be very minor ones. It doesn't have to be major ones, because they know how to utilize all these energies coming in that are dark. And they will then use that to do things like chemtrails, do crazy, weird things that alter the what's going on in nature around the world. Mm. They do all kinds of weird stuff. So it's essential that we understand that. Now, what the light has been doing is slowly turning all that off.
Okay.
Because to turn it all off at once will affect the light on this planet. Because the dark and the light, somewhat, until this is gone, need to be in somewhat of a degree of balance.
Mm.
So they work so that everything decreases. As the light increases, the dark decreases. There's exact balance. And they know how to, when everything will be off and the light will be totally around us. So they are constantly working. Heaven is working to bringing more energy of the light here. And the Federation is working with various instruments to counter it. You know, up in space, these people have worked out, and these various dark agencies in the United States and others have worked out these schemes where they actually try to attack the Federation forces. And, of course, that's like somebody with a slingshot affecting going after a guy with a laser rifle.
Unbelievable.
They don't give up. That's the one thing I have to say about them. They do not give up.
Tenacity is their middle name.
That's their middle name, and that's their giant problem, because until they give that up, it is going to take some coups to get rid of them, some nice peaceful ones, but still they have to be gotten rid of. They can't stay where they are right now. Anybody who looks at all of this understands that.
And I just want to thank you for that last explanation. I think that's going to help people immensely to recognize that there is a ratio of how much light and assistance they can bring in all at once. I mean, that was just beautifully put, by the way.
Thank you.
Seriously. So another question, kind of a little off topic, and that is, do you believe that there really was another Atlantis?
Well, I believe there was an Atlantis. It unfortunately, due to its arrogance, sank about roughly 12,000 years ago. What we have to realize is that there aren't any more Atlantises. There are civilizations that tried to replicate the stuff they had, their weaponry, their religious incantations and how to operate and energies, etc. But no, there hasn't been anything since then.
Okay.
Although they have tried. When I was first starting out in this, I met a few people. This is in the early 90s. I met a few people who were involved with another one of these crazy schemes of theirs. They took people who were ex-military. They brainwashed them at night. They took their energies, their spiritual essence, and they borrowed it while they were asleep. And when they went to sleep, they put them in an even deeper trance and used them to go, using time machines, to go to Atlantis and try to save Atlantis from destruction. I heard from one guy they tried a zillion times. Each time, same thing happened. They didn't stop it because that was something in the history of us, time-changing or not, that was essential to happen.
Mm.
That's where I first heard about Inchara and all the other things related to it. It blew my mind when I was listening to the guys and they were telling me about this spiritual army of souls that they had directed like robots to do certain things. That's how arrogant they are.
That's amazing.
I mean, it blows your mind.
That's amazing. Wow. Oh, I can't believe it. Now, I thought I read a long time ago that there was kind of like an Atlantis on the Pleiades system.
Well, I haven't heard that because the Pleiades, all the stars that make up the league are pretty much all that are all human, and that's pretty much all that's there. All human civilizations are with the light, and the Pleiades actually are one of the older groups that has been a part of the various Federation organizations from the beginning. You know, these go back millions and millions of years. So I'm really... When I hear all that stuff, it just,
It's almost like, Sheldon, Atlantis needed to happen, at least from that perspective, to really kind of teach us a lesson so that we move forth really getting the lesson, since we're all a unified field.
Right.
That you do this, you affect everything. Ultimately, it'll never be a positive outcome.
No, there can't be a positive outcome. Atlantis, when it started its experiments with humans, first the ridiculous loss of consciousness, and then the even more ridiculous hybrids that they did, you know, at the Minotaur and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. The Greeks have some of that in their mythology because that craziness actually really did happen.
Happen, right. And think about it. You know, you're talking about human experiments. My God, that's been going on World War II. You know, it's going on now in Los Alamos labs.
Right. We have to understand that these governments are equally as crazed as Atlantis was. Not to the extent that they were, because when you get to certain levels of consciousness, when you go bad, it's unbelievable. So we have to understand deeply in our hearts that, yeah, these people are evil and they do crazy things that would make you want to puke or fall over out of, oh my God, but they're not as bad initially as the Atlantis was. Atlantis is kind
wow.
of like the dark heart, so to speak. And
oh
so we have
God.
To remember it's gone. Yay.
Are you but serious? These guys aren't as bad as the Atlantis time frame?
They're almost. Because they're limited consciousness. The technologies that they can utilize are minor league compared to what the Atlanteans did or the Anchara Continuum and their group did. So we have to realize that as bad as they are, and they are pretty bad, they are not as bad as the Atlanteans were. The Atlanteans, if they would have been allowed to succeed, would have completely messed up the entire history of this particular planet and, of course, of this entire galaxy, really, when you look at it.
Wow.
So that they got one step over the edge and went away, yay.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you agree that there is a propensity for young, lower dimensional planets to fall into these sorts of negative nets, where, you know, an allied force situation needs to be sent in to assist them and bring them out of this Alcatraz kind of situation?
Well, there have been some, but ever since the Continuum finally went to the other side, the amount of galactic societies, I don't know if we can call them galactic societies, but these planetary societies doing what they've done has not happened anymore. We've had in this galaxy a light open up with the change between Michael and the Anchara Continuum. The only thing really left, unfortunately, as I keep repeating, is here.
Yeah. Wow. So you really do agree this is it. This planet is it.
Yeah, this is it. And
wow.
The changes that are going on behind the scenes right now, which obviously have to be watched because I've given you an idea of the degree of technology and arrogance that they have. That's why the Federation does not want to come in immediately because they have brainwashed everybody through movies, articles, TV programs, documentaries, etc., to make it look like anybody who suddenly shows up in numbers has got to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so the purpose that the Federation wants to do is not to counter-brainwash us. What they want to do is have a process whereby, through governments and other things related to governments, there is a change, and that this shift then allows the Federation to come forth and to do what it needs to do in a very orderly and logical manner, and they do not want to have to worry about people yelling invasion and all that other stuff related around it.
Right.
So it's essential, it's necessary that all this happens in the proper steps, and that's why they are watching us. They are making sure that nothing bad happens, but they are making sure that this progression happens. And so since they have to do this and they realize it's going to happen rather quickly anyways, they do not want to do anything that would cause even slightly a change in how the awareness is growing on this planet. They want to make sure it stays positive and that as the change moves up and gets greater and greater, there are these changes and it allows then for a new currency system, a reset of that currency system, a new financial institutions, a change in governance. And with all that done and happened, they can then move to the next step, which is to announce themselves and set up a general plan for how this mass contact is going to happen and what's going to happen afterwards, so that everybody knows that this is a natural process. It's not being forced, and it's part of a change in consciousness. And that's what is really important for everybody on the Federation to do, because they do not want to do anything that can possibly act as a break in some sort for this change that's now going on rather rapidly around this world.
Yeah. They don't want us to go backwards, which has happened so time and time again.
Exactly. Yeah. They want to make sure that we maintain a pace, or increase the pace right now, so that it leads to positive ends. And that's what's really important.
That's awesome. Is it true, you know, you've talked about December 21st, 2012. You've talked about it many, many times. Is there something that didn't happen that was supposed to happen around that time?
The big thing is the governance change. We have to realize there is a network of cabal-oriented regimes around this planet. They control military forces. It's essential that all this change happens in such a way that there is no violence of any sort other than this, that there is a peaceful change. Mm. And when that does not happen, they have to pull back, and that's what they do. And so when certain things are said to happen, and the counter is the negative Kabbalist governments doing what they do, then we have to realize that they will step back. Their job is not to wage a war against the darkness. Their job is to be guardians of the light, to make sure nothing goes backwards, and to leave it to us on this planet who are working very hard to change this, to give them knowledge that, yes, there is a galactic option over your heads. That means it won't go backwards, but what you need to do is go ahead and do all those particular things that you are doing, and to do them as fast as you can. Mm. And if you need some indirect influence to bring that forward, they will help. But the process is not to make it look in any ways that this is something that they are doing. It is part of a natural process that all worlds go through as they change in consciousness. So they know that, and their job is to not hinder it, but to work in such ways to bring it forward and advance it.
Wow. Wow. That's so exciting. So, I mean, with that said, then all eyes are upon us, because we're affecting an outcome not just for planet Earth, right?
Exactly, exactly. That's why when if you were to look at different ships, you will see all kinds of ships up there. If you could see them clearly, you would see that they are from all over this galaxy, both Federation and non-Federation ships.
Fantastic. In fact, that was another one of my questions, which is, we've been noticing a lot of UFOs above our house.
Mm-hmm.
And they've increased, especially in 2015. Meaning they seem to be flying at a lower altitude.
Right. They want more and more for people to notice them. Hmm. And once again, it depends on person's awareness. Example, Hawaii. Hawaii was a Polynesian kingdom. Cook came. He went into Kalakahua Bay, which is on Big Island, with his big ship, his huge sailing ship. Guess what? Nobody for days noticed he was out there. Everybody went about their business like there was no English ship out there in the middle of the bay.
Huh.
Suddenly a person in an outrigger fishing ran into it, came back to the village, and suddenly everybody noticed the ship.
Interesting.
So we have to realize there's an awareness going on.
Yes.
And we have to, therefore, work that process. So when more and more people get to see the ships in the daytime, it's that awareness, like the outrigger, of suddenly seeing, hey, there's this weird-looking sailing ship out there in the middle of the bay with these funny guys with, looks like, ghost-like skins.
Yeah. Yeah, that was on The Secret, right?
Yeah, among other things. But
yeah.
We have to understand that. That's a very famous case about awareness. A lot of people use that case because it is so important for understanding. We're talking about consciousness. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a lot of people that if they were suddenly to see, let's say, an atmospheric mothership, which is like 3 to 6 miles long, suddenly up there at 10,000 feet, if they were to notice it, it would, even though it's a friendly ship, it's bringing out energies of positive vibes, they probably, because the immensity of the size and the weirdness of it, there's no wings or anything, would probably get initially humans, when they see something new, the first thing they do is they get scared. And then, so we have to understand that it has to be done in such a way that there's no fright, there's only joy. And of course, that really widens the parameters to the point where it requires very special operational orders. And so they let the scout ships go lower. People that are ready for it will start noticing them. When I was on Hawaii, I would talk to people and I would show them the ships in the sky, how they were changing lights and everything, and they would, a lot of them wouldn't believe you. So,
wow.
You have to understand that there is a level of awareness, and those that are more aware, like yourself, will see them. Those that aren't, won't.
Yeah, you know, in fact, the other night we have a laser and we shined it back at them and we, you know, drew a symbol and we were, you know, I'm a real big proponent that you must connect with your heart. It's not just this, right, this thing in your brain and your mind that, oh, hey, I want to see an ET, because if you go from that perspective, you're going to possibly attract a lower dimensional extraterrestrial ship. And we were blown away because they flashed us back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very low flying. I mean, we were just amazed.
Well, that's their job.
They can, to amaze
they can
us,
telepathically,
right?
Look at you, understand you're friendly, so they will do a friendly thing, which is to shoot it back, just briefly. And it will just be one of their instrumental beams that doesn't hurt anybody, because they use that all the time to, there's nobody around to check the atmosphere or the ocean or the ground. So they'll just shoot that at you real quickly. It's like a laser that can't do anything, unlike a weaponry laser. And so they do that because they want you to understand that, yes, we know you're there. Yes, we acknowledge you. And yes, keep it up, because you're a part of a base that we want to be vastly explored that says, these ships are up there. People say they're not up there. They are. I have no doubt about it. And I want to just tell you about it and to know that they are very friendly people.
Now, with that said, Sheldon, a lot of people write in and have asked, well, how do you determine and discern the difference between a ship of the light and a ship of the military, maybe, say, the Greys or other dark factions? Do you have any feedback on that?
Well, one of the things, first thing that you will notice if you see them up there, the energy, it won't have any energy to connect with. It won't feel. Because most of the beings that do this, which are military, very special military, understand many things, but they don't have the degree of consciousness that the Federation ship would have. So they're just up there. They're trying actually to do the opposite of what the Federation ship is doing. They are trying to maintain as low a level of people being able to see them as possible, whereas the Federation is up there. And if you really look, you can see them, and they're not trying to hide. So you'll immediately, that's the first basic thing, is you'll feel the energy. Second one is use your telepathy, mentally talk to them. And most of the time, you'll get nothing back. It's just silence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually some of the things you will notice is the differences.
Good point. God, that's a great point. Now, you mentioned that there's just, you know, a bunch of different races and civilizations that are in our skies right now as we speak. Can you enlighten us on some of the ones that we may not hear a lot about? Like, you know, we hear about the Andromedans and the Pleiadians and the Sirians and the Arcturans and the Lyrans. You know, what are some of the other star systems that are participating?
A major one is, of course, the Centaurians. And, of course, Alpha Centauri is a star that's about 5 light-years away. It's the closest star we have. And it's the brightest star in Centauri. And there are a lot of civilizations in Centaurus that are very advanced, and they understand what the Federation is trying to do. So add them to your list. There's a whole bunch. There's Cygnus. There's a whole, if you look across at the major constellations, just about every single one of them has Human Federation members.
Hmm.
And some of them also have non-human members that are very sentient. And understand it. Like, for instance, Cetus the whale. There's a wonderful bear group that's in Tau Ceti, and they are very friendly.
Neat.
And even though they are huge bears.
That's so cool.
You will notice them. As a matter of fact, one thing that I have done is I wrote a book called Your Galactic Neighbors. It's about 22 civilizations, and most of them, 14 of them, are non-human. So,
wow.
Just, you know, pick up the book, read about it. There's pictures, and understand that there are civilizations of these advanced sentient beings from all kinds of animals. As a matter of fact, one of the things I was told when I was very young, and which I've been repeating again and again, is simply look around this planet and see all the different animals. Just about every animal group has a sentient being from an advanced civilization somewhere in the galaxy.
That's amazing.
So just know and understand that there's all these magnificent beings, and we just have to understand that and get and be one with it. Some of them, of course, the giant insectia groups, they scare us, you know.
Yes, yes.
Example was in Mexico City, this beautiful advanced being with super light, but it was basically an insect, and they did not understand. The wife who saw it at this home in Mexico, she just went panic, started running around screaming and everything, and the husband was able to get pictures of it. And when you see the pictures of this praying mantis type being, you can see how light it is. There's huge immense light coming from it.
Yes, I've heard that too. I actually have personal friends that have had contact directly with the praying mantis, the Atheans, right? Is that what they call themselves?
Yeah.
And they say their stories, they're funny, because when they first meet them, I mean, you know, you see the underbelly of the praying mantis, and it scares the heck out of them.
Right, it does. It does, and there are other types of insectia that are like that also. So we have, so one that we have the most fear of are the, might call it the larger insects, that suddenly become 6 to 9 feet tall.
Wow.
And suddenly, to us it's not funny anymore, because we've grown up since being a little kid, most of us, with a fear of them. And to suddenly see them, even if they're trying to use their various advanced telepathic energies to try to calm us down, we're so overwhelmed with our fear that any kind of stuff used to calm us down just doesn't seem to work.
You know, Sheldon, I just had a flash. It's almost like, could this possibly be an experiment of putting the human race in the midst of all of these insects and cetaceans and animals that are at a smaller size, only to prepare us that they will one day be, say, an equal to us?
Well, that may be one of the things, but unfortunately, human civilization, the way it has progressed, has created a degree of fear of nature as it moved forward.
God, so
the result of all of that is it becomes harder and harder to work out a process of some sort to change all of that.
Wow.
You know, and even when I was a kid, when I first met my first dinosaurian, it was, shall we say, scary. I had nightmares.
How big was he?
He was almost 8 feet tall.
Oh, my God. And he was bipedal?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He looked like a raptor.
Oh, my God.
A little bit bigger than a raptor, but still, you could see the light in his eyes. But the tail and even the gown and all that did not persuade me to think otherwise. And he knew that, so he turned around and immediately used his telepathy to calm me down. And, of course, I had my guide washed it with me. He just explained. He said, everybody in this room is a highly conscious being.
Wow.
They're not here to do anything it took him a while, even with his great energies, to calm me down. And when you see all that, it the initial energies were, even though they were great, the concept in my head was not.
No. And I would imagine, I mean, what would be the projected time frame for our species to be able to be at a place where you were to just handle being in the same room with,
Well, once we become fully conscious, we will return to all the knowledge that we once had.
Mm.
And we'll have the Akashic records open to us. We'll have the Federation histories open to us. We'll understand that all the stuff that we now have that's generated as fear, you know, when people think about dinosaurs, they, in the modern age, think about Jurassic Park, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look around and you were to suddenly see a group of them, it can be rather scary.
Oh, my God. What a trip.
But actually, they're not meant to be. It's just in our mind we feel scary about it. And, of course, they look at us, and their personal feeling as a civilization is that as far as it goes, we're a little bit ugly.
I'm only laughing because I know we've said the same about them.
Right.
You know, I you know what I think? I think I want to meet the koala bear planet system. So, question for you. You've talked about the actual council that's been running this planet, and I want to tell you that was really assisting for me because I've looked and looked and looked, and I'm an avid researcher. And you very explicitly depicted that you have, you know, America and the NATO forces. You have the Russia, Japan, China, Saudi Arabia, Colombia, Latin America, Vatican, and North Korea, and the G8. Those are basically supposedly the kings of the world. Is there anything you can tell us about what's going on at that level?
Well, we have to realize that there exist groups, and I like to call the ancient families, which are families that are remnants from the three golden ages that have maintained enough of their identity that they understand the histories. And they also have ancient works and books that help them to get a better understanding if they lose any knowledge from their present reincarnation about who they are. And they understand it. And they also are heavily supervised by the Ascended Masters. In the case of China, it's the main one is Kuan Yin and Lantos.
Mm.
But if you look around and you understand that it's not just families in China, it's ancient families in India, in Europe. There are members of the royalty in Europe that are heavily involved in all of this process of change. Same thing for the Americas. And they have resources that they hid away a long time ago to keep the grubby hands of those out in the open that we know about all of this. You know, the lust for gold of some of these people involved in banking and in government because of that is immense,
mm.
And it's always been that way. Example is the Incas with their emperor Atahualpa.
Mm.
To save him and ransom him, they asked him to fill up two huge rooms to gold, basically from ceiling to floor, from wall to wall.
Mm.
They did it in like less than half an hour. They just brought in tons of gold.
Wow.
And they were so absolutely enamored of this that there was this immensity of gold sitting around that they didn't know about, that they went into temples that had gold shields that represented their concept of the sun god and ripped them all down and melted them into gold bars. This is the kind of energy we're talking about.
Yes.
We have to constantly remember that this group exists, and it's losing it. It
yeah.
overextended itself drastically with this whole concept of fiat currency over the last 100 years. So luckily, we're coming to an end of this immense, unbelievable arrogance and this feeling that the whole world owes them whatever they want.
Yeah, no kidding. And, I was going to ask you, isn't another one of the reasons they're so obsessed with gold, doesn't it have something to do with being able to space travel or hop dimensions or something like that?
There was a thing about gold, but that has left, when they figured out exactly how flying saucers operate, which was before World War II, there was even a German Interplanetary Society that existed in the 1890s that had ships, and actually, mm-hmm. when they saw what was going on, they took their seven ships, and they headed out into deep interplanetary space and were eventually picked up, and their ancestors are the beginnings of a race of people on some world somewhere that went out there.
Wow.
You also have to remember that Marconi, he disappeared in the late 30s.
Uh-huh.
He was part of a group that actually contacted in Brazil people from Inner Earth and moved into Inner Earth because they wanted to get away from this. As a matter of fact, you've heard of the book, The Places of the Lion?
Yes, I have.
The people that they met, the so-called quote-unquote Venusians, were actually former Germans and former Italians from Marconi's group that had settled in Inner Earth and were attempting to come back to human civilization and deliver messages. That's why the main guy who was speaking in one of the ships that's mentioned is always landing had a slight German accent because that's what he was.
Interesting. Now, does this have any affiliation with Admiral Byrd and that whole story?
Well, a lot of that story has also been covered up immensely.
Yes.
And also, we have to realize, I call it the Nazification of major governments in this planet. And
yes.
This is another reason why they have become so evil. They create wars. They don't care about how many people who are, quote-unquote, soldiers on their side, defending whatever they're talking about, dying or getting immensely maimed or whatever they have to do with war. And they look at all of that, and they're proud of the fact that they have created this situation where people snap to their attention, whether they create an incident or not, and all kinds of implications from it occur. They are happy. To them, that shows them their power. That's how arrogant they are.
That's amazing. And those are the ones that have the really high percentage of reptilian DNA, right?
Well, I don't really buy all that reptilian
no.
stuff.
Really? So, seriously? Real. Why? Tell me.
The evil intent of these groups are immense. And there may be some reptilian energy in it, but immensely, I just see them as being very dark and very human, but really very inhuman beings. And they have been perpetrating all kinds of crazy stuff for decades.
You know, you brought up a good point, because we talk about this around the coffee table, so to speak, a lot. And that is, how in the world do we determine who is really who with the type of technology that they use in this matrix?
Well, we have to remember, what we would think of as advanced, which is really still primitive compared to the Federation technologies that they have, they being the people in charge of these governments.
Right.
In spite of all of it, to us it's immense. I mean, they can teleport, they can show up, they can change their size, they can make themselves larger, smaller, they can move through time. But all of that stuff, which most people, if they had a background in science, would just fall over crazy to get their hands on it, is limited. Because remember, since the middle of the 19th century, they've been sequestering any kind of change. Mm. They've been working on it. They kill these people, or else they cut them off, and they put them in a corner. Example, think of what if Tesla could have been able to do what he wanted to totally do in the 80 years, roughly, of his life, what he could have done.
Oh, I know. And look at the way he died. I mean, it was just so sad.
Or just take a guy named Stubblefield, a coal miner from Kentucky. He invented a coil that you could attach phone to, and you didn't need wires. You just plugged it into the ground, and you could call anybody up. They
wow.
had another coil like that.
Wow.
They got that in the early part of the 1900s. They did not want anything to happen. Or take all the so-called free energy devices. I've been involved in the middle of a few of these, so I know they are evil. And I even had one device that basically the Federation turned off on me, because in the next room, While I was waiting to get a contract, they were getting ready to shoot us.
Wow.
So we have to understand the amount of evil and the degree of sequestering that they have been doing for over a century. And think of all the neat stuff that they have their hands on.
Wow.
Just realize that.
And we just don't have any capacity to wrap our brains around what they use on us and in this reality. We just don't have, you know, we all sort of understand cloning.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into things where, you know, they can shoot, just literally they can shoot a beam at you and either force you to have a heart attack. Everybody's heard about that. But what about all the other things where they can literally create these ghost-like, you know, scenarios where you really believe that they are there, that they really exist?
Exactly, exactly. And also you have, as I said before, you have this global psychic network, which is designed to work on controls, constantly throwing all kinds of information that's dark or evil at you, trying to keep you from being positive and uplifted. So it really takes an immense amount of control to maintain these energies. And so I think of everybody on this planet. Not everybody has backgrounds in that. And so think of the degree of control that they indirectly are walking through every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that has to be shut down. That psychic network has to go. And
is that the next thing in line? I mean, do you feel
sure.
that that's their next target?
They've already lowered a lot of that pressure right now.
Good.
But it's not completely there. They have to take their time with doing things because energies have to shift in a gradual way. So that's something that they do. Now, the degree of gradualness is lowering. In other words, it's speeding up.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they have to follow a degree of timetable. And, of course, as I continually say to everybody, as far as this timetable goes, I wish it was over yesterday.
Yeah.
I just look at what we have potentially to accept and where we are today. And I look at it and see how primitive we all are right now, because that's what they want. They want to keep us at a certain level where it maintains their ridiculous concept of profit motive and money.
And it's so sad because the human species is absolutely magnificent.
It
and
is.
And yet the majority of us will never even believe that, you know.
No, because we're always taught that we are living on a little ball of mud in an insignificant sun sitting, floating in the middle of a vast galaxy. We don't
so
believe
true.
That we are something else. And that's what we're constantly bombarded with.
Speaking of which, segued into my next question. Tell me what your feeling is about the attention being placed on the flat earth theory, because there is an incredible amount of data that is very supportive in presenting the fact that we live on a flat earth, at least foundation, even if we are within a sphere. So I was curious what you think about that.
I look at that as utter idiocy.
Why?
The earth has a curvature. If you would look at the world, a flat earth would not have the degree of curvature in different directions that they want with a flat earth. It's not flat. If you get into space and you look down, it's not flat. If you look at planets around you and moons, guess what? They're not flat either. So under the law of similarity, where you find something and usually you'll find the same thing in a similar to what you already see, then the concept of a flat earth is bizarre.
Okay, well then how about the fact that every single picture of the earth from space is admitted by NASA to be a composite? Why aren't we being shown what the earth really looks like?
Ships.
Ah, okay.
Look, when they went to the moon the first time with Apollo 11, they had behind them a whole fleet following them.
How funny. They
were told to keep their cameras looking forward. They originally had their cameras looking backward. And then they saw the fleet was starting to appear, and immediately NASA said to the guys, move those cameras forward. And that's what's happening. There are things happening around our Earth all the time where you would see huge ships and things like that. And, of course, if we were to show that on the planet, if we were to show a true picture of this planet, and you would see all the ships and all of the things related to it around it, my God.
Well,
it
that
would be impossible.
That would explain, I was going to ask you, because there's footage from the astronauts even where they don't show anything past like a 90-degree angle behind them. So
they
what you're saying is that they're always being followed by a fleet of ships.
They're being followed. They were told to put their craft and turn it over on its side and to just look at certain places. And so that's what they do. They don't want cameras pointed out towards real space, because it'll bring all these phenomena around us into full measure, and it'll be impossible by the overwhelming degree of pictures that it's pretty obvious that we are not alone. So if people keep saying that if people keep saying like they do at SETI, we don't have any knowledge of it, all of a sudden there'd be a million pictures. And of course they don't want that. They don't want that at all. So they have set up so that they keep everything under proper scope. Mm-hmm. And that's what they have been doing. And, of course, the astronauts, when they are asked about some pictures that they took that were actually ships, they cannot say that. This is something, even when you see Buzz Aldrin, he goes back and forth because he's afraid of breaking the whole concept of the secret agreement, because he could wind up spending the rest of his life in prison, which he does not want to do.
Right. Either that or they're going to threaten his family if he breaks some sort of contractual agreement.
He will. So sometimes he will say something, and then he will say, well, I didn't really mean that. Let me really explain this again.
So it's soft disclosure.
It's soft disclosure.
Yeah. Well, okay. Now, here's a great question for you. Antarctica. I would love to hear, what do you feel is the reason why, what is it, over 50 countries are not allowed to go there?
There are certain things happening, like the hole is beginning to open up, and there's that lake, that Russian lake that in Antarctica that's been opening up. We have to understand that, and there's another reason, which is, of course, that the remnants of the original Nazi weaponry is still there. We have to understand all of that when we look at anything going on in Antarctica. They know that if people were to really know what's going on down there, other than it's immensely cold and it's basically an ice desert, if you go beyond that and you start talking about the history of what's going on in Antarctica, you immediately get to see something entirely different than what science tells you or what people are allowed to say. I mean, they're throwing secrecy acts at anybody that goes down there.
And who's they? I mean, who's controlling Antarctica, in your opinion, right now?
What's controlling Antarctica right now is that there are lots of ships over the South Pole. There are lots of Agarthan ships that are around there, and they know that. And there's also phenomena which indicate that certain aspects of geology are no longer functional. And they understand that. They don't want people to know about it.
Wow.
So as you begin to look at what's happening on our planet, both at the South Pole and the North Pole, you begin to see a picture forming, which is, they do not want anybody to know what's going on there. For instance, if airline pilots were to really tell you that the area around the pole is so magnetic that it ruins their abilities for their guidance systems to operate, so the result is all these people that go, quote unquote, over the pole aren't really going over the pole. They're going over an area that they're allowed to go over.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hole around the North Polar region, the North Polar hole, is real. And for instance, the two most famous pictures that I've seen, NASA pictures, by the way, are pictures from the Apollo 11 and Apollo 14 returning to Earth. Mm-hmm. And these are really cool pictures. You can clearly see there's a North Polar hole. And
wow.
The Russians have done studies where they've gone around the edge and they've gotten all kinds of strange phenomena. It's pretty obvious that the North Polar region, especially the area where the North Polar hole is magnetically different. And as a matter of fact, a lot of scientists in the Nordic countries, in Northern Europe, have been looking at the aurora in the North Polar region. And they look at it, and a group of scientists are now beginning to say, it's not all kinds of cosmic energy that's causing that. It's actually from the central sun of the Earth, the core of the Earth. And it's from the fact that the Earth is hollow. And of course, if you were to suddenly say that there's an advanced civilization inside our planet, and that it proves conclusively that the planet is hollow, and that practically every planet that they've taken pictures of shows hollowness. Like, for instance, there was a recent one they did of Mercury, and they discovered that the southern pole of Mercury is hollow. Mm. You can see inside the planet. So if you look at all of this, the hole that they discovered in the North Polar region of Mars, and if you look at all of the solar system, you begin to suddenly see that the geology that we have very strongly worked on for centuries to create is false. Just about all the stuff about the origins of man is equalized. Because if people were to get a change in what has really happened, it would alter everything. It would alter religions, the origins of government, all kinds of things.
Right. Just their whole foundation of truth itself is just
right.
going to be shattered.
All those lies would immensely shatter away. There would be no ifs, ands, or buts about it to try to get it back. It would be, I call it the Humpty Dumpty effect. They know if this thing falls off the wall, it's not going to come back. It's gone. And that's why this lack of disclosure on this planet and this ridiculous cover-up has gone on for so many decades, because they are seriously worried of something breaking the hold of what is going on right now. There are people, as I said, luckily we have a great group of people of the light working carefully with the Federation and the Ascended Masters to bring us close to the point where we are going to see great changes, and we're very close to that. But what we have to realize is that the group that has been running our planet, you know, the guys actually running it, the guys who really elect our president, the guys who really determine who's going to be prime minister of whatever country, these people, they still run everything, and they are very worried. As I said, they are scared of what's happening. And they're seeing that their fiat currency is slowly falling away. And so they know that when that goes, it means the banking systems are changing. It means that the entire process of not only their financial system, but their governmental system and how they control the world will fall by the wayside. And they're really afraid of that. And this is one of the major things that they look at every day when they wake up and say, what's going on with the world that they do not want in any way, shape, or form to change? And they are, you might say, to the end of ends, they are not going to change anything. So when everything happens, that's why they say there will be these sudden announcements, because they've been basically trying to hold back the cracking of the dam, holding back the giant waters behind it for as long as they can. And the dam is now reaching cracks where the water is going to start flowing and the dam's going to fall down. And they know this, and this is what they are trying to prevent. And they're trying to do it as difficultly as possible. They don't care the obstacles in front of their faces. They want to keep this going, and it's extremely important for them to do so.
That's crazy. Gosh, so many questions are whirling around in my head. I mean, first of all, you mentioned that, you know, they're finding more and more planets that actually have poles. Now, can you explain to me at what point is it determined that a civilization lives on the exterior of the planet versus the interior?
Well, this is what makes it difficult, because the Federation groups live on the inside, because all planets are hollow. And if you knew about, if you knew vortex and fractal theory of how the universe was created, you would immediately see that this is the norm. And we are just, we're limited conscious beings, and we live on the outside because we were left behind when this group that was Atlantis left. It's not normal for people to live on the outside of planets. So all our science fiction is based upon the concept of people living on the outside of planets.
Right.
And that's not true. So when you go to a lot of these worlds, you see nothing. Like if you go to Mars, even though it's a civilization inside, you don't see anything.
Correct.
You see that, you see the remnants of that aspect of the civilization long, long ago that used to be there for the, for various parts of the planet were nodes, and that's one of the missions of fully conscious beings, of physical angels, is to monitor the planet and therefore to put up temples in other areas where they can do chants and move energy so they can maintain the basic energies of the planet.
Huh.
And because their job is to do that. And the whales right now in the oceans are fully conscious beings, and they understand that. They even sacrifice themselves for us.
I know.
When they did the first whale conference back in 1971-72, it was in Santa Cruz in California. And so they saw this guy from Africa. It was a shaman. And because they wanted to know what he had to say, they decided to make him the keynote. So he started it off. So speaking in his African English, he simply said about the whales, they are everywhere. They are in the sky. They're in the ground. They're in the water. And then he left.
Whoa.
That was his message. His message was very simple, and it's the truth. We've discovered that the large whales are the record keepers. The littler whales, the tooth whales, are action figures, so to speak. Their job is to move energies using the ocean to move it upon the planet's land masses.
Hmm.
And that's why shamans would say, who know and recognize energy, would say cetacean energy is helping to maintain the energies to allow animals and plants every spring to reproduce.
Wow.
They know that. They understand that. That's why killing the whales is sacrilegious.
Oh, my God.
And when you understand all of that, and you look around and you see what's going on, you say, well, there are some really advanced civilizations, so to speak, that I look upon advanced with what they're doing for human rights. I wish they would understand enough to extend that to the whales.
Yes, and the dolphins.
And the dolphins. Well, the dolphins mostly are the smaller toothed whales.
Incredible. And, that's one of my questions to you is, you're one of the few people out there that I've read about the galactic cetaceans.
Right.
Okay. Well, and you mentioned that it was a guardian group. I would love it if you could expound upon that. You know, like, where did they come? Do they still exist now? Did they leave the planet? You know, anything that you can give us on that, I would love it.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. Now, we look at the last year, maybe the last year and a half, on Crimea.
Yes.
Okay, what is so important about Crimea? And when the first thing you look at, you'll see that north of Crimea, there are the Caucasus.
Mm.
Now, let's go way back in history, 6 to 8 million years ago. And I was told this story long ago, and I have it in my book. But let me explain it a little bit more. There once was on this planet, through migration, three groups, an advanced race of dinosaurians, reptilians, and of mammals, namely the cetaceans. That's just a Greek word for whale. So they looked out there, and they were told to be guardians. So they looked out there across the planet. And the other two groups conspired with groups from Orion to want to destroy the cetaceans.
Mm-hmm.
So the cetaceans looked out at this, and they decided the only way to do this was to blow up their energy systems in the Caucasus and to leave behind their civilization. Now, across the lower part and the northern part of Crimea, there are pyramids. And they've noticed in one pyramid one very important thing. There seems to be a non-human being lying at the base of one of these pyramids. Whoa. With a crown on its head.
Whoa.
Now, this is just the last remnant of the, what I like to call the land cetaceans, or in the case of the whales, the pre-cetaceans. And they said that after that, they went back to the ocean to hide from the radiation that got rid of the other two groups. Mm-hmm. And they set a galactic cetacean group out from here across this vast galaxy to discover where they could have a hierarchy that would agree with them to create a fully conscious group whose eventual destination would be this planet and the planets around it, but mainly this planet, to act as a land guardian. And that is the reason why the humans were created and why they have moved. And one of the earliest chances was for civilization to move here was this planet. Hibernia, the great northern continent talked about in all the myths.
Yes.
You have the time of it. It was destroyed by a group of Ancharans from Orion roughly around 2 million years ago. Think of that, an advanced civilization on this planet over 2 million years old.
That's amazing.
We have to understand, and when you look at that pre-cetacean civilization, that it almost rhymed, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You see a civilization that's over 6 million years old. With pyramids and all kinds of things like that. So you look at that, and you then see that the history of this planet is pretty strange. And of course, if you get bones of dinosaurs, and you ask them to age them, in other words, to do some carbon testing on the bones, most large museums and most large schools of paleontology will refuse.
Huh.
Guess why? Because the bones are more recent.
Whoa.
We have to begin to understand,
yeah,
that our history is a lot different.
Yeah.
That our geology is a lot different. And as you begin to understand that, and also it implies something else that would get various scientists upset, mainly in anthropology, which is that our origins are not from here. We are a very unique species. We are unlike, and the unlikeness, the dissimilarity is large enough to show that we are not from here. So you look at all of that. You know, there's remnants of various super odd blood types. There are all kinds of things about us that are different, that show that we are not primates from planet Earth. So if you look at all of that, and if a biologist and an expert in medicine was to talk to you about it, or an anthropologist that has really discovered all of this and was allowed to talk about all of this, it causes a massive change. Think of it. You change anthropology, you change geology, what's it going to do to theology?
True, and that's one of their biggest cover-ups.
Exactly. Once you realize all of this, like they used to show this crap about oil and how we were running out of oil. Well, in order to lubricate itself, the Earth makes oil. It makes tons of it every day, millions of tons of it. But we don't want to do that because it does all kinds of bad things to the atmosphere.
Doesn't the oil provide Mother Earth kind of her own, what do you call it? It helps her kind of with her own joints.
Yeah, it lubricates
the planet. Her, yeah.
So if you understand the nature of that, and you understand that the oil is there, that the gold was put there for the life of the planet, Aurum represents the life energy of the planet.
Yes.
It's a very unique mineral. And it's also a very unique element. Gold is virtually impossible, unless you know how to do it properly, to change it into something else. That's why the ancient alchemists were always talking about turning things into gold, because it was like a permanent thing.
Right. It's like reaching the ultimate state of consciousness. And I work with homeopathy a lot. Aurum is a phenomenal homeopathic.
And that's what they knew. They knew that gold represents the highest energy of life and the highest energy of how this planet's energy works.
Interesting.
And, of course, we have to look at the Earth as being a living being and look at ourselves as living in a gigantic living hologram. And if you understand all of that and you see ourselves as spiritual holograms, you begin to change the concept of what life is. Because it expands it outward immensely.
Sheldon, do you agree that, we have all these tectonic shifts and the plates and the continents splitting apart and, becoming separate? Do you feel that that's a representation or kind of like a macrocosmic view of our own mind, our own brain?
Well, the whole concept of the floating tectonic plates, that's just because the planet had to put itself down to lowered consciousness, and that also created changes in how it's put together.
Interesting.
So once we achieve higher consciousness and the planet is fully potentialized, the plates will actually come together and expand. This planet will get to be much bigger. And you also understand, if you look at the whole concept of vortexes, etc., you begin to see that a lot of Kepler's mechanics, which were the first basis of understanding the very nature of how our solar system operates, was largely wrong, because it saw the stuff going on around it as being something that was only two-dimensional, because the full three-dimensional and above mind wasn't really thought of until we really had levels like advanced algebra and especially calculus. And once you could imagine that in your mind, and you could talk about 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, et cetera, 7 dimensions, it changed the whole concept. Of course, immediately up comes the people trying to maintain the orthodoxy.
Sure.
And they started calling these imaginary numbers.
Mm.
So we have to realize the world doesn't understand all of that because it is not allowed to really do anything.
Right.
There are a few people who totally get mentally into the whole concept of mathematics and spend their lives, because they are geniuses at it or very close to it, and they become advanced mathematicians, and they sit in their ivory towers, so to speak, and the whole day there, sitting at a blackboard or a computer, putting together various forms of topographic mathematics. And so they are imagining what a 5-space looks like and all that other stuff. So if we get beyond that, because one of the things one physicist told me was, if you can't explain something using your voice, other words, common reason languaging, using advanced, very, very forms of mathematics that are very effusive to the average person is not the way to do it. And that's what these people are doing, these scientists. They are talking all the time in this funny little language of 5-space and 6-space and events, etc. All of this is wonderful, but the average person will not know anything about it, because it's to a level of degrees that they cannot fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do with science is create a spiritual science that allows people to fully understand the nature of how the cosmos works and how it interrelates with heaven, and put together a concept based upon true characteristics. And with that, you can develop a degree of understanding that allows you to successfully use all of that to advance consciousness.
Yeah.
And that's what we really need to do. We don't need to bring people off into effusive areas and go off into advanced mathematics and advance these modelings, these typographic models that the average person would look at and scratch their heads. We don't want to create effusive stuff. We want to create things that are totally able for people easily to understand. And once you do that, because basically the universe is really quite simple mathematics to understand it. And once you understand that concept and you use it, you see that all this advanced mathematics is wonderful, but that it has a relationship that we don't normally understand, because there's the thing that has happened in with humans is to keep us confused. Anytime anything gets advanced, they stick it off into some specialization. And then it becomes magic. You know, just like in the beginnings of our civilizations, we had what we called wizards. Mm-hmm. And wizards means that they could do mathematics. That's all it meant. To invent mathematics of some sort was to whiz. And the wizard means one who can whiz. So we had these mathematicians, these wizards. That's what wizards originally were.
That's
and they
wild.
Worked their mathematical magic. They did all kinds of interesting, incredible things. And the ultimate level of that was, of course, alchemy.
Well, and you know what, too, Sheldon? The more they make these into specialty fields, the more complicated it gets, the more they build upon a system that really isn't based on truth anyway, and the more it feeds the program that we're inferior because most of us can't understand it in the first place.
Exactly.
So it's all part of the whole matrix to begin with.
It is.
You know, one of the things you touched upon, and I thought it was interesting, is that, you know, you really went through kind of a crisis at 14 where they had been prepping you and taking you up on the ship and educating you and teaching you all about these sciences and the galaxy and everything. That must have been a really intense experience for a a teenager-aged kid. How did you get through that? I mean, were you basically just kind of an isolationist?
Well, the only kids I really were friends with were people who were oriented toward physics or science anyways, math.
Right.
But the major thing that I was trying to do was to take the science that I knew, which was at then the beginnings of quantum physics, and I wanted to take the concept of quantum physics, especially the mechanics of it, and merge that with the spiritual science that they had shown me. And when I tried to do that, I was met with all kinds of craziness. And even when I went to university, I went to orientation, and the professor there was a Newtonian. And so I explained what Washed explained to me when I was 14, which was that Newtonian physics is really a small capsule of what science totally is meant to be. And that got me into a lot of trouble, because I suddenly was labeled by this guy as an anti-Newtonian. And so his job was to flunk me out. He almost succeeded. I went a whole year with lousy grades. I was practically having a nervous breakdown. I have this skin condition, and it broke out like crazy. I had a hell of a year. And then, to keep from flunking, I had to change to social sciences and do all the stuff required. In other words, all the gateway courses in summer school. How about that for pressure?
God.
And I had to have, and I got all the way through. And I just had a couple of B's. Yeah, I took three courses through three, four summer school programs. So I took like 12, 14 courses, and I got my average just above a C. So when it came September, I was still there. But I mean,
wow.
When you've gone through all of that in your first year of college, it kind of wiped me out for a little bit. And I kind of coasted. My second year in college, I kind of coasted a little bit. So I took all kinds, since I had done all the gateway courses, I took all kinds of electives. I spent almost my entire second year of college doing electives. So when I graduated, I had like double the amount of the average student who graduates from college. But
wow.
But the interesting thing about all that, it got me to learn about the world in ways that I probably never would have learned about. Like I took African studies, Latin American studies, European studies, East European studies, China, etc. So I learned about the world.
Well, and you have such a well-rounded perspective. I mean, I think that's why people really respect your work. You're able to bring in a lot of that technical scientific facet to
right.
your work, you know, and rather than it just being spiritual.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I did. And when I was reaching the point where I could come out and start doing public lectures, the only people that were open to what I wanted to talk about were people who were involved with various spiritual aspects of, you might say, of the world. They were involved in what is spirit and related to all that, you know, consciousness, etc. And so I began there. I didn't begin with the UFO types that were totally into nuts and bolts stuff. Though I had the background, I could have done it, but I didn't really want to do it that way. And of course, when I first started doing my lectures, I had people from NASA who came to attend my lectures, and we would talk at the end of each lecture about what their science was doing. And so I would learn about all the weird stuff that was going on in the local NASA base, so you might say.
Right.
And so I was able to do this until finally they were told by their superiors that if they continued to see me, they might get fired. And so they told me one day that this was the last time they would come. They would all have to go back and stay there at night and not be able to come over. And so I lost that, and I considered that a big loss. But that was part of the process, was that I was able to get the science aspect of it after I had started talking to people who were mainly into the spiritual aspect of all of this.
That's and no better and more perfect combination in which to bring this information out to the world. Because this is ultimately where they want us to go in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely want everyone to please check out Sheldon Neidl's three books. He has one called Your First Contact,
right.
Another one called Salamaja, A Guide for Galactic Humans, and the fourth one is Your Galactic Neighbors.
Right.
And he's doing a webinar, and you should be able to catch it on Thursday night at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and that's all about merging the science with
right,
the spirituality, right?
Right? If the best thing, I interrupt you here, but
sure.
I want to just say that if to get to the webinar, the best thing to do is to go to the website, which is paoweb.com.
Perfect. I was just about to get to that.
Okay, I'm sorry then I jumped in there. Sorry.
That's okay. So going back a little bit, you know, in our last, let me see, we have maybe about, about 10 minutes. So I really want to ask you what you were talking about before regarding the synthesia, and you were saying how we were ultimately going to be in a place where our words and our colors and our sounds would all be kind of combined together, right? Like this.
Right.
Would,
right.
Okay.
Now you have a genetic anomaly, which a lot of people have, which is called synesthesia.
Synthesia.
And what that is you see colors. And when you see a bell ring, you don't see or hear just in your mind the sound. You see colors with it.
That's
and
so
then there's
awesome.
Some people that go even farther than that. When they hear a sound, they don't just see the colors, they can actually taste the colors.
Wow.
So,
how cool is that?
So some people will go to a concert, and instead of saying, that was a beautiful rendition of Mozart, they'll say, wow, that really tasted good.
Well, now, isn't this going to cause a little bit of a lack of communication amongst those, depending on where their evolutionary scale is?
Well, as we head toward full consciousness, the amount of people experiencing it, or actually daily experiencing synesthesia, is increasing, because basically when you're a fully conscious being, this is part of the senses that are normal for you. In other words, when you see flowers, you don't just smell them, you see their colors.
Nice. So, yeah, definitely. I mean, and as they say in aromatherapy, that's the fastest way to break through the brain barrier, is through smell, you know?
Right.
Now, you've mentioned several times in some of your work that the divine plan has moved up its schedule. And I was wondering, can you tell us why is that? What has caused the divine plan to move up their schedule?
One of the things that has been happening, as we've been explaining during the course of this time together, is that we have more and more consciousness happening on this planet. And most importantly, we have groups that are aided by the Federation and by Heaven and by the Ascended Masters. And they are reached points now where they can start affecting the nature of the currency system on this planet and the financial system on this planet, and eventually added with that the governance. Mm-hmm. And as they do that, they will change everything. So the divine plan is moving in its own way to bring all this to fruition a lot faster than initially, because we are waking up beautifully.
Awesome.
We are waking up across our planet. There are people in places that never thought they would ever wind up there that are thinking about advanced concepts and consciousness. And they may be very lonely, and a lot of people write to us or get in touch with us, and they're talking about, well, I'm out here in the middle of central Kansas or whatever, and I can't get anybody, and I feel like I'm so alone.
Yeah.
And so I need to talk to somebody, and that's what is happening. And I want eventually, with what is happening to this organization, I want eventually to be able to start connecting people. And so that we can start building planetary activation, which is what I talk about in Selamat Jah, and begin to actually create this network. I had the beginnings of it about 10 years ago, but since then, certain things have happened to us, and our intentions have changed. But we need to go back and build all of that. This is one of the major things that I want to do when I put this organization together on a larger scale, so that we can begin to talk to one another. We can begin to have places we can go to.
Yes.
So that everybody has a chance to see that they have an opportunity to go to a place where they can talk about all of this stuff and not be looked upon as being crazy or weird, but actually be among people that says, that's great, and
right.
I know this and I know that, and everybody else saying, I do too. And so you feel a community, and that's what I want to start doing, is building communities.
We are so on the same page, Sheldon. In fact, when I was prompted very strongly, I might add, to put Galactic Connection together, that was one of the things that I was guided that I was to do. And just like yourself, you know, there's just not enough human resources and time to be able to undertake a lot of the projects that have been presented to me, you know, and it's one of the, so you and I, we should definitely talk about that. Now, tell me something, how are planets selected for seeding like the Earth has been?
Well, the Earth always had a tradition because it's a very special place. The singularity that created this galaxy is at the center core, central light zone, the central sun, whatever you want to call it, of our planet. This planet was a wanderer. One of the things that I was told long ago was about wanderers, and I didn't understand what that was. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at a documentary, and they're talking about the formations of the galaxy, and they're talking about wanderer planets.
Huh.
And I was going, yeah. We have to remember, and then Velikovsky has, Emmanuel Velikovsky, who had a very interesting theory back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, talked about Venus being a comet that had come into it and had wandered into our solar system and become Zenus. But our planet itself was a wanderer. It was captured by our sun for a purpose. And that's because this solar system has, you might say, a specific potential fate that it is to go to, and it is moving toward that. Mm-hmm. And as we move toward that, we will get more and more enlightened, which is what's happening to us, and we will eventually be allowed, the Federation will come down and help us become fully conscious beings. When we become fully conscious and we've created this new star nation, we will create the abilities, because of all that we have access to finish our fate. And our fate is to be the peace star nation, to be the nation that finally helps all the rest of what used to be called the Anchara Alliance, all those nations, those planets, to become fully conscious. And that's what we're doing on this planet. And they know that. They understand that. And that's why they're watching us.
Oh, my God. I'm tripping. Okay. You got to hear. This is one of my questions. Is it true that as we graduate through the galactic training, we ourselves will undertake galactic missions traveling to other planets and stars to discuss the disadvantages of having too much darkness and war?
Exactly. We are moving. The Anchara Alliance agreed to disband and become a part of the Federation because of a permanent peace. And we're the final, you might say, coffin nail in that.
Wow.
It brings that peace and makes it viable.
Again, I thank you. That is such a confirmation to so many of the messages I've gotten. Now, I just want everybody out there, like, how excited are you now? Just think about that. Just really ponder about why you're going through what you're going through right now, what you're getting prepped for. Sheldon, I think you probably agree with me. I tell people this all the time. We are truly going through an initiation.
Yes, we are.
And we must prevail in order to prove that we can have the right stuff to be, I mean, who better than us to
right.
go and spread that word across the galactic, you know, the galaxies and et cetera, to convince these people they don't want what we have just started and begin to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that gives me goosebumps. What is your feeling about space time? Is it true that time in its own, you know, people say we really don't understand it fully, but is it true that it does exist in all dimensions and all realities because there's some sort of construct involved?
There's a construct involved. But what we have to learn and understand is that time is not really a measurement. It's a feeling. It's a creative feeling. It's an energy that puts together galaxies and dimensions. And we have to see it as that. Right now, when you think of time, you say, oh, it's almost 3:00. That's what people would say.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't what time is. That's a very, very restricted concept of time. We have to realize that time is an energy. There's the Time Lords. It's not Doctor Who, but it's the Time Lords. Mm-hmm. And they are part of a process that creates galaxies, creates planets. They work with the Elohim. And we have to begin to understand inside of ourselves. We have to create new realities inside of ourselves that all of this is happening and that time as we know it is not just a measurement, it's actually a feeling. If you look at the time systems, like for instance that of the Mayan or of the Egyptians, they didn't look at the seasons as time and it was, oh, it's November now. They didn't look at it that way. They said certain energies were coming in, that these energies would change every year, but that these energies represented certain aspects of the year and that they must be honored and they must be acknowledged. And that's what the whole concept of time is about. So if you look at their system, it's all about time, not as a 6:00 or something like that.
Right.
It's about a feeling. And the feeling is as you begin to understand it, you begin to create within yourself a consciousness. And that's what they wanted to do. They wanted you to realize that your consciousness was with the earth and that it was about the light. And even though they talked about the dark, it was in a very, very, very localized concept. And when people look at the mind and they talk to me about all this crazy dark stuff, we have to understand the mind were playing with energies that they fully did not understand. That's why their civilization died.
Mm.
And it's still there. The Mayans who are now, after the Spanish conquest of the 16th century, they're looking around and they're beginning to see that the original concepts are right. That's why the Mayan believed we had to get out of our civilization. It's destroying us. And they began to see that you have to operate out of that because buildings and structures and wars and kings and all that are things that are not part of what humanity is about. What's really about it are the feelings of this year and this the understanding of the nature of the circles of life, which they like to talk to me about a lot.
Interesting.
We have to begin to understand that. And the Mayan priests, the shamans I've talked to understand that. But humans on this planet who have been thoroughly westernized do not. They look upon time as 5-11 or whatever.
Right. Right. So really what you're saying, we need to be more in sync with Mother Earth's seasons and also the planetary cycles and the movement of the stars and the sun and all that. That's basically what you're saying. So that we're more in a cohesion.
The cohesion, that's right.
Okay.
You have to remember, some of the finest astronomers in the world before modern scientific instruments were invented for astronomy were the Mayans.
Yeah.
And when people study the charts that they created, they are astounded. They are totally astounded by the degree of accuracy of these people looking with their bare eyes into the cosmos every night, what they found and what they came up with. It's amazing. They were real searchers. The same thing for the Egyptians. There are stars and systems of their astronomy, Egyptian astronomy, that are so advanced, it amazes the crypto astrologers and also the astronomers who look at time, the paleoastronomy. They understand that there was something else going on here, but they can't really explain it because science, the way it's now instituted, does not allow you to go beyond this little straitjacket that they have. But slowly there are scientists around the world who are seeing the importance of spirit and are trying to re-put that back into science.
That makes sense. Yeah. Now, Sheldon, I just can't go past the comment you made just a couple of minutes ago. You said that the sun captured the Earth.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
It was a wanderer planet.
Right. Like
if it comes too close to the sun, it will be captured. I mean, that's what happened with our moon. You know, we have an artificial moon. It got captured.
Wow. I've never heard it put that way. Is that in relation to the fall?
Yeah, it's in relation to the fall. We used to have two natural moons. Both are gone. All that's left is a moon, which used to be the artificial fifth moon. I call it eventually when it's reconstituted Pax, but most people know it as Maldek.
Right. Yes. I remember that. Now, you've also talked a lot about the photon belt. Are we officially in it, out of it, in the middle of it? Where are we at this point regarding that?
We're in a special pocket, our entire solar system. It's an energy. I have learned to go beyond the concept of a system of time. I see it as an energy, and this energy is something that we are coming out of. And when we fully understand completely this whole consciousness that we are going through and become fully conscious beings, we'll fully understand the nature of the mechanics, in other words, the vortex and fractal physics, of all of this, which always ties into sacred geometry and sacred numbers, etc.
Wow.
I think that if people would be allowed to really discover that, which they probably will when they study the Akashic records, when they're fully conscious, they'll learn the beauty of it. It's everything. You look at the energies that heaven, the great and wondrous creative force, made this incredible reality that we exist in, and all the other ones around us, you begin to see the pattern of it and the amazing wonder of it.
Oh, man. That is so awesome. So I think one of my very last questions, because we're running out of time, is can you clarify for people at this point why are we such an atypical species compared to all the others out there? What really makes the human species so significantly different?
Well, I I see us as actually more as humans on this planet, on the surface of this planet, not on the interior.
Okay.
As being actually degenerative. We have been regressed backwards, and we have things within us. We have epigenetic blocks and other things related to that that have kept us from becoming fully conscious again. You know, our natural state is to be a physical angel, to be a person that's born, grows, ages, and dies is a cycle craziness. And that's why humanity has always had this fear of death. It's what runs our society. And once you go beyond that and you get to be fully conscious, the whole process of what this reality is about changes. So I don't know. The uniqueness to me is the upside down backwardness of it. I mean, that's one of the first things that they mentioned to me.
That's good.
That being the Syrians, is they call this the upside down backward civilization because it was designed that way. The Anunnaki did one amazing job on us.
Oh my God. So there, you do agree they're just in awe that we've made it this far, right?
There's a degree of awe, but they also know the prophecy was that no matter what the Anunnaki did, the ultimate, you might say, goal of this planet, of this surface civilization, is to return to what it naturally is about, which is to be fully conscious.
Oh my gosh. Well, Sheldon, I am so grateful. I really look forward to interviewing again in the near future. Hopefully we can put some ideas together. Please, everyone out there, you know how dedicated Sheldon is. He's always putting out this information, and this is how he supports his family and himself. Please visit him at paoweb.com. And catch his webinars. They're awesome. They're just completely full of information that can really assist you on your walk and your journey to raising your consciousness and being a proactive participant and bringing forth this new society that we all talk about and we dream about and we envision. It's time for us to take action. And that's what I really honor you, Sheldon, is that you're constantly hammering that. You know, I mean, you're always reminding people we've got to, pick up our stuff and move, progress. So also, please check out his books. They're fascinating. They've got so much information in them. I have one here myself, and I can't put it down, and I constantly revisit it because it has so much information that never goes out of, how do you say it? It never goes out of existence. So anyway, Sheldon, thank you for your time today. Is there anything you wanted to end this with before I let you go?
Well, I just want to thank you before I go.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you for this time. I hope we had a wonderful time. I know I did.
I did too.
And forward to looking upon sometime doing this again and expanding upon what we talked about for these 2 hours.
Yes, I really agree. And everyone, we just want you all to know how much we love you, and we're here to support you. We're doing everything we can to provide you the assistance and the support. I am honored to be here to help in any way I can. So please continue to visit galacticconnection.com, and you can check out the implant removal process. It is top-notch, and it's worldwide, and also my alchemy. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact either Sheldon or myself. So again, Sheldon's website is paoweb.com, which is planetary. Say that again.
Planetary Activation Organization.
Activation Organization. I love it already. Okay, everyone, take care and have a wonderful rest of the week, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks, Sheldon, for everything you do.
Right. Thank you for all you're doing, and thank you for having me be a part of this.
You are so welcome. Take care, everybody. Lots of love.